It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Well, you really can't talk about farm to table without talking about water, because water makes food, and food is what we're all about, raising it and consuming it. And so I like to talk to farmers. I like to talk to people that are trying to solve the problems that we face. And, boy, one of them is with me today. I want to welcome Randy Record. Randy has farmed. He's got farming interests currently, but he's also the chairman of one of the largest water agencies in the world, the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California. It's huge. And at that district, he's been an industry leader in innovative agriculture water demand reduction projects. And in addition, he's on the board of directors of Eastern Municipal Water District, where he has been a leader and advocate for using recycled water in agriculture, something that's not just a California issue. It's something that can be looked at and is being looked at all over the world. Well, in that service area, they have over 11,000 irrigated acres with crops that include just about everything that you can think of. And they're doing innovative recycled irrigation programs involving Cal Poly and involving growers. Well, Randy, welcome to Farmer Table Talk.
Hey, thank you, Roger. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, you know what? I can't resist. I got to point out that you listen to us on Farm to Table Talk, too. So every once in a while, I get a chance to have a conversation with somebody that's a listener. So I'm happy. In a way, I get to turn the tables a little bit.
Well, it's been great. I really appreciate what you're doing. I've actually connected with some people based on listening to them on your podcast, and it's really been a great resource for me.
Well, that's good. I just talked to somebody that's a friend of yours, actually, that said that they heard my podcast with Patrick Mulvaney and went to the restaurant in Sacramento. So I felt like, well, that's pretty direct.
And it is.
Yeah, you didn't happen to go there, too, did you?
No, I did.
Oh, you did?
As a matter of fact, I did, yes.
Did it live up to expectations?
It was great. Yeah, enjoyed it very much. They have a small room, a wine room there, and it was kind of a intimate dinner, and it was everything that I thought it would be. It was wonderful.
Yeah, I've just up there recently, and I really like the fact that they know the farmers, and you end up having for dinner whatever's kind of fresh, what people brought in, and that's what they make up for the menu that night. So
right.
I'm glad you had a chance to try that out. So anyway,
me too.
I'm glad to have you here. So the fact that you even go to Sacramento suggests that even though your roots are as a farmer, you're somewhat pulled into politics, aren't you? It seems like when you talk about water, the word politics come up because it's just such a struggle to solve all the problems facing water.
There's no question about it, especially when you consider the state of California and what it has to offer. The microclimate, the Mediterranean climate, the water supply, the vast area of the state, the desert, the Central Valley, the Sacramento Valley, coastal areas, it's really phenomenal. But yeah, politics, especially in California, you can't avoid that. We're considering some pretty important improvements to our water delivery system in the state, and so we're spending a lot of time in Sacramento working with agencies and with the governor's office to try to do best for all the people in California.
So, Randy, there was a time you probably couldn't imagine that you were going to be in the midst of all these water issues. So when did it start occurring to you when you had farming all kinds of different commodities in Southern California, that you needed to get involved and you had to, you know, run for a board and to represent the interests and concerns you had with water? What stage was it in your farming operation that you're driving a pickup truck through a field one day and said, by God, I got to get into this?
No, actually, it goes back farther than that. I really do have a unique history. My family, I should say, does. in San Jacinto, California, in Southern California, when Metropolitan was building their Colorado River Aqueduct in the 30s, they came through our valley, they tunneled through a mountain and impacted our water supply. And my grandfather was one of the initial parties that settled with Metropolitan. It turned out to be a much bigger part of the community, and that's when Eastern Municipal Water District was formed. So I've been aware, I would think, my whole life of Metropolitan and its impact. And then as a farmer, especially in Southern California, you just can't farm without really considering water and everything that goes along with it. Water from water agencies is typically expensive in Southern California to farm with. And so we did have some well water, but we also had recycled water dating clear back to the 70s. So that was a real great learning atmosphere for me to be associated not only with water districts, but with native groundwater supply and then the recycled supply. So it got off to a pretty early start. And I was at one point asked to run for the water district, and I did, and I'm glad that I did.
Well, let's go back to your grandparents' time. Now, first, let's describe what the land looked like back then, when your grandparents were farming that land, which, what, is almost like straight east of Los Angeles, what, 75 or 80 miles?
It's about 85 miles east of downtown Los Angeles. It's on the coastal side of the San Jacinto Mountain Range, which separates inland Southern California from the desert, from the Palm Springs area.
Yeah, so
the San Jacinto Mountains provide a very good watershed for our area.
And nothing grows there unless you irrigate it, right?
There is some dryland grain that's grown, but, you know, getting those April rains is always a challenge. And so, for the most part, if you want to guarantee that you have a good crop, you're going to have to irrigate.
So at that time, back again, say in your grandfather's time, what kind of crops did they grow back then?
My grandfather started a dairy in the early 1920s in the San Jacinto Valley. So we're pushing 100 years on that. And I can remember him telling me about how plentiful the water was here. And at that time, there was a lot of grazing going on for animals. And there was quite a bit of irrigated agriculture, but it continued to increase. And as more people drilled wells and utilized that resource, became more of a challenge to make sure that the groundwater was enough to supply all the needs.
So is there an aquifer, a pretty good aquifer that's under that area?
It's a very good aquifer, high-quality water. The watershed of the San Jacinto Mountains is provides a very good runoff when we have what used to be typical rain years. Haven't had that amount lately, but over the years it's been very good.
Now, California is getting water all the way from the western slope of the Rockies in Colorado through the Colorado River. Was that some of that water comes close to your area?
It does. It does. In fact, Eastern Municipal Water District, one of the 26 member agencies of Metropolitan, receives Colorado River water as well as state project water from Sacramento Valley through Metropolitan. So we utilize both of those sources of water, supplement our local supplies.
So that water has to go through a lot of Colorado farmers that like to keep a little bit more of it, and Utah, or maybe, I don't know if it touches New Mexico or not, but the top of Arizona, Nevada, you know, there's a lot of people that would like that water that gets all the way to you.
Absolutely. Colorado River is seven states, various Indian tribes, and the country of Mexico. 15 million acre feet was what was allocated back in the 20s, and it turns out that that's probably more than what should have been allocated. So it's been a challenge, and California utilized more than what their 4.4 million acre feet right was over the years until the early 2000s when federal government said it's time to live within your allocation, and we've done that.
And then who polices that, that's drawing from the water? When you go multi-states like that, I mean, what's the way that you keep, say, some rancher in Utah taking more than they're supposed to?
Well, ultimately, it's the Bureau of Reclamation that manages that. And so they're monitoring what's going on, and there are various districts throughout the Colorado River watershed that have contracts with the Bureau, and so they're, I would say, complying with what they're supposed to be doing.
So what happens if they catch somebody using more water than they're supposed to?
I don't think they hang anybody anymore, but...
well, that's good.
From my knowledge, I don't think it happens very often. I think the bigger issue is the Colorado River watershed has been in drought conditions for well over 10 years now, and a shortage looks like it's on the horizon. And so the lower basin states, Arizona, Nevada, and California, have been working very hard to try to come up with our own plan for how we share the shortage. There's a plan in place that we can fall back on, but typically it's much better to work that out going in and trying to find a way that's least painful for everyone involved. That's what we're working on.
So you pay more attention to whether it's snowing in the Rockies for other reasons than just going up to ski.
That's true.
Yeah, that's and what about New Mexico? Still doesn't have any rights to that water, do they?
New Mexico does, but they're not part of the lower basin states.
So Mexico has some rights to the Colorado. No.
Now, are you saying the country of Mexico?
Yeah, the country of Mexico.
Yeah, no, the country of Mexico gets 1 million acre feet. And we've worked very proactively with Mexico, especially lately, because there have been some issues with earthquakes that have impacted their infrastructure and their ability to take their water. So we have stored some of that water on their behalf and then made it available to them when they were back online. So I would say that our relationship with Mexico is very good at this time.
Now, I remember reading Cadillac Desert, and there's been movies about the water issues coming into California and so forth. But do you still draw water down from, like, is it Owens Valley and up through that side of the Sierra Nevadas?
The Owens Valley is a project of the city of Los Angeles. Oh. They did that in the early 1900s, and that supply is just for the city of Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
Shortly after that William Mulholland, who was the engineer that was the driver of that project, then turned to the Colorado River as another source of water supply.
Well, let's go back to your grandpa's days then, because you said they had a dairy, and then at what point they decide we don't want to be doing dairy anymore and we can start growing crops or different crops?
Well, in the early 1950s, when my dad got out of college, unfortunately, grandfather had a bad accident that didn't allow him to run the dairy anymore. So at that point, my father and my uncle partnered on the dairy. Later, when I got out of college in the late 70s, we started farming dairy feed and eventually moved into vegetables and some citrus and things like that. Now, my mom's side of the family was also farming in the San Jacinto Valley starting in the 30s, and they were growing row crops, potatoes and onions and lettuce, cabbage, supplied a lot of different installations of the war effort from San Diego to L.A.
Well, and the availability of water, has that affected, or the quality of the water that's available to you, and the quantity, I guess, affected the crops that you grow in that area? Or the choice of crops?
I would say that it's partly the cost, because the imported water costs more than the local supplies. And if you don't have enough local supplies and you depend on the imported water, then you're going to be challenged, because not all crops that we grow are of enough value to support utilizing the more expensive water. Now, Eastern Municipal Water District has made the effort to develop all of our recycled water and make it available to agriculture so that we can not pump as much groundwater. And I think that has been just phenomenal. It's very progressive. Started way before I got on that board, but I think that is a I don't know of a better use for recycled water than keeping agriculture viable and protecting other sources of water that are available to us, not only for ag, but for potable purposes as well.
Okay, so now you're adding another source of water. One thing we don't get to think about as much as they do in the eastern part of the country is that just counting on the water falling from the clouds when we think it's handy, sometimes you complain it doesn't come exactly when you want it, but when you get 40 inches of rain a year, as much of the Midwest does, it's a whole different ball game. But so you've, aside from clouds, I mean, you've got surface water, which is coming in from irrigation or from the Colorado River. You've got water that's pumped up from the wells that's drawing out of the aquifer, and you're adding a third source now, recapturing recycled water. Did I get that right? Does that make sense? So we get those three buckets, if you will.
You're correct. The imported water, as we call it, we don't call it surface water, but imported water is Colorado River water as well as State Project water from Northern California, and that travels a long distance and requires a lot of energy to get it here, and by nature it's very expensive. So that hasn't been a very good option for the types of crops that we grow in the San Jacinto Valley. So, and we are limiting the amount of groundwater that we pump so that we can keep the basins in a sustainable condition. So recycled water has really been of great value for this region.
Before we go into the recycled much more, let's talk about the water that comes from the north, that comes from that's flowing all the way from, I think some of it would start at the Delta, or maybe even beyond that. I think you could count the water maybe from Shasta that gets into the rivers, that gets into the Delta, and what, travels 550
right.
miles to get to you?
Yeah, it's a long ways. I mean, our water starts in Lake Oroville on the Feather River above the Delta.
No.
Shasta Dam is a federal project, the Central Valley Project, but that's in that same region. So, yes, those two sources of water are what a lot of it ends up in Southern California. The interesting thing for me is that there is twice as much rainfall or water supply in California than there is on the Colorado River. There's on average about 32 million acre feet in California. And so for Metropolitan, which is on the coastal plain of Southern California, containing half the state's population, about 19 million people, we need about 4% of that water reliably to take care of our customers. And so there's quite a bit of water there, but we have needs. I mean, there's great agriculture in the Sacramento Valley, the Central Valley, and so we're kind of at the end of the line, but we want a reliable supply, and we certainly don't want to take any water that someone else needs along the way. I'm convinced that we have enough water if we provide the right kind of habitat for the environment, and we allow people to use the water that they've had access to for generations. I still believe that there's enough to get us by if we make best use of it and use it in the wisest way possible.
You know, we got to pause a minute and pull back on a number you threw out there. You had 19 million people. I mean, you could pick random half dozen states that don't have that many people. And
right.
19 million people in the metropolitan area. I guess that's how the water district has its name, Metropolitan, because it's that whole metropolitan area all around Los Angeles, isn't it? All the way in.
That's right. That's right. It goes from the Ventura County down to the Mexican border, down to San Diego County. So there's six counties there, and as I said, about half the state's population.
Well, and such a big population. I get that again because across the country, and maybe across the world, there's always that challenge of farm-city kind of relations and issues, and people like the idea of farming, but not necessarily in their own backyard, and all kinds of issues. And I remember when Farm City Week was created to try to create better understanding. But you're right in a spot where there's some really important agriculture, but it's like a biggest metropolitan area that is around so much agriculture. I can't think of a single place in the entire world where probably the issues come head-to-head as much as they probably do there.
Well, it's very interesting, and it's an interesting history. It hasn't always been. I mean, I believe today that we have great relationships with agriculture from the north and from the south, and I think years past or decades past, it was more of us against them, and it's certainly not that way now. I mean, we've come to the conclusion that there are times when the urbans need water when it's available from ag. Maybe commodity prices are low and they would prefer to move some of that water and get a little cash flow that way. We know that with 19 million people as ratepayers, we're able to make improvements in farm areas that allow them to be more conservation-minded with the water, improving delivery systems and things like that, so that we can then take the water saved and make it available to our people. It's really a great partnership. And, you know, every year is different, whether it's rainfall or commodity prices or who knows what. So it's critically important that we maintain those relationships. And I think we're in a pretty good place right now.
Well, now, Randy, you're chairman of the Metro Water District Board, are you not?
Yeah, I am.
Well, that's quite an honor. And I think that we're lucky to have somebody with farm roots and still engaged in farming to be chairman and elected chairman of such a huge undertaking where the issues of the farm and the city come together. So, you know, good on you, Randy. I'm proud of you.
Well, I appreciate that, Roger. I hope I bring that to Metropolitan. One of the things that I've done that I've been very fortunate to do was be president of the Association of California Water Agencies. And that's a statewide organization in California that has over 400 agencies involved, both urban and ag. And I was able to really make a lot of contacts there and really get to know the state better. It was just an invaluable experience for me before becoming chairman of Metropolitan.
Well, and I'm sure you have to spend a lot of time kind of talking with others and working with them, trying to find areas of common interest. And so when you get elected to a voluntary job like this, I know it's a lot of work and it takes a lot of time. And so again, I really commend you for it, for people that step up and say, I'm going to get in there and try to make a difference. And it sounds like you are.
I appreciate that, Roger. I hope so. I'm having a good impact.
Well, now let's go back to the subject that you started to bring in. We had these three buckets that we're pulling the water out of. So we've got the imported water. We've got the water that we're pulling up from the ground. And we've got recycled water. Talk about that. What are all the sources and the opportunities you see for recycled water?
Recycled water is a great resource, especially for Southern California, especially for those, because we have 19 million ratepayers and people that utilize water. So there's a tremendous amount of water that's recycled to kind of a low degree at this point and is discharged to the ocean. Metropolitan is partnering with one of those sanitation agencies to build a very large treatment plant so that we can make that water available to Southern California. There's probably nothing more reliable than recycled water because, people are living and providing that water every day. You need the plants to treat it and you need a distribution system to get it out where it can be utilized. And we've been very fortunate at Eastern to get some funding from the federal government, from the state, and also from Metropolitan to really make a robust distribution system for our four recycling plants that are all tied together in the distribution system.
So the sources of that water, I suppose any kind of runoff and things that go into the gutters, so if it rains or you wash your car and all that goes into gutters, and that's one way it comes from. But also showers and toilets and dishwashing and clothes washing and all of that, wouldn't it?
Right. It's more the latter. The gutters and things like that is more of a flood control issue, and most of that does end up going to the ocean, although we do capture some, and there are efforts to capture more, but that's a very expensive proposition. But recycling goes on every day throughout Southern California, and there's tremendous opportunity to utilize that resource. And maybe we've utilized it more at Eastern because we're too far away from the ocean to do ocean discharge. But I believe that the agency has been very progressive over the years, and as I said, started way before my time. And we've utilized every source of assistance that we can find to develop this system that is really, really serving us well today.
You know, you just mentioned another place, a fourth bucket, and that is potentially the ocean. Are you doing anything on desalinization?
Well, actually, at Eastern, we do that with some brackish groundwater. We have some basins that have low-quality water, and so we have developed wells that lift that water out of those basins and built desalinization plants that clean up the water and then put it into our potable system. It's very expensive. It's very energy intensive, and we're able to do it because we're also part of a joint powers that has funded brine lines to take the byproduct from that desal process for further treatment down in Orange County. But that's become about 10% of our supply, and it's helped to keep our good groundwater basins in good shape because sometimes the brackish water wants to migrate over. So that's a fourth source for Eastern. But in the Met service area, San Diego County Water Authority has a very big ocean desal plant in Carlsbad, California, and that's one of their base supplies. It's very expensive, but they made the decision that reliability is very important. They have a big tech industry, and they've got a very good economy, and it was important to them that they have part of their portfolio be a supply that comes out of the ocean that should be more reliable than just about anything.
You know, Randy, a lot of people get a little squeamish when they talk about having food products that have been irrigated with recycled water. You know, just, you know, there's a certain kind of ick factor that, you know, they've got in their mind that, oh, I don't like that idea. You know, what are the stages it goes through? I mean, we don't have to, none of us are engineers, but if you were just kind of explain to people what happens to this water and the filtering and the stages and so forth before it could be used for irrigating.
Well, let's focus on the fact that none of us are engineers.
Oh, okay, so good. Okay.
I'm not.
Yeah, I just didn't want a technical explanation.
Right. But I can tell you this. For me, it's my own personal experience, because when I started using recycled water in the late 70s, it was secondary treated water, and then it became secondary chlorinated, and it was still a good quality water, but you couldn't use it on anything but forage crops. Today, it's tertiary treated and chlorinated, and it's really high quality water.
What does that mean, really tertiary treated?
Well, it's the additional level past secondary, which is about as engineering-minded as I can get.
Okay.
But it basically takes it to a level that makes it safe to use for just about anything. You can swim in it. It's just not used directly for drinking water. But you can use it on any crop, and I think it's just a really good way to utilize that resource. And I think most people, especially from California, who understand that we have challenges with our groundwater, we have challenges with the lack of consistent rainfall, that I'd like to think that at some point people are going to say, if I have a choice, I want the produce grown with the recycled water. Because actually, it's treated and monitored to a higher degree than groundwater is. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you'll have some groundwater that maybe it doesn't start out that way, but at some point during the delivery system, it becomes contaminated. And we just don't have that with recycled water because we have to operate to such a high standard, and we work very hard to make sure that it's safe, and we're constantly monitoring and testing. And I have all the confidence in the world in that water, and I'm fortunate that the house that I live in is close to some of the fields that I've farmed over the years. Recycled water is available, and I've actually been able to use that for the landscaping in my yard. Mm-hmm. And I'm very proud of that, and I wouldn't do it if I didn't believe it was completely safe.
So that water, when it is recovered, it goes through a filtering system, and then does it get recharged into the aquifer or into wells?
No, it doesn't. We may do that someday, but for us, that will mean another level of treatment. And we'll also have to get some salt out, because by nature, the recycling process, where that water comes from, has salt added to it. So in order to protect the quality of the groundwater that's in our existing basins, we need to treat that even further before we recharge a basin with it. And we're at the point at Eastern where we still have enough agriculture that we can use all that water in ag or for park landscaping or industry and save that high-quality groundwater for potable use.
Mm-hmm. Do you have people that have similar districts in other places in the world or other places in the country that
Yes.
Come to you and say, we want to understand how you're doing this because we're running into similar kind of issues and we want to try it in our region?
We do, especially with SGMA, the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act that the state of California passed a couple of years ago. At this point, we know that our groundwater basins have to be sustainable all throughout the state. So if there's any opportunity to utilize recycled water, that's going to be done. And so we are finding people that are interested in seeing what we've done and, you know, learning some of the pitfalls and some of the challenges that you deal with. You know, a distribution system as well as how you allocate that water, if it's in great demand, and the interaction between taking the pressure off pumping groundwater and making that water available in the right way. Those are exciting challenges, and we have information that we're happy to share with people.
Well, Randy, you also get involved in things that are beyond just Southern California, too. And now, do you have some projects, I understand, that are going on in the Delta that involves some islands in the Delta?
Kind of complicated, but yes, we do. And it goes back to the State Water Project, which was envisioned in the 50s. And the first water, I believe, was delivered in the 70s. Metropolitan is the biggest state water contractor. We have half of that contract. If there's 100% allocation, which rarely ever happens, that would be 2 million acre feet for Metropolitan. But typically, it's down around 20 to 45%. The original project, which starts, as I mentioned, in Lake Oroville and passes through the Delta, was supposed to have a canal to separate that water from the estuary. And it didn't happen for whatever reason. So we find ourselves now at a point where we have pumps below the Delta that pick up the water that flows through the Delta. And when those pumps are pulling hard, it's making rivers run backwards. It's called a reverse flow, and that's not good for the estuary. What we want to do is build 30-mile-long tunnels underneath the Delta and not deny water from the estuary, but take the water that is surplus and separate it so that we're not pulling that water in a manner that makes rivers run backwards. Part of that process is staging areas for building those tunnels. And I should point out that we're in the process of getting that project put together and starting construction. We're not there yet. But a couple of years ago, Metropolitan knew that if the project came together, we would need islands in order to stage tunnel boring machines, have a place to go with the spoils. And we decided to do that up front. And I need to be clear that we still don't know if that project will happen. But our thinking was, if it doesn't, those islands are great opportunities to provide habitat, as I mentioned before, to go along with the water that we're utilizing for the environment. We've been doing a number of long-term studies over the years with native tules and with putting water on rice stubble to try to reverse what's happening in the Delta estuary, because it has been in decline for a number of years. And we want to be a part of making that, getting it back on the right track. It's part of our water reliability, but it's also part of the state of California. And the people that live there and have farmed there forever, they want that as well. So it's contentious in California. You got water from the north going to the south. My job is to make best use of it. I tell people all the time, I don't want your water. I want the water that you couldn't possibly use. I'll take that water, I'll store it, and I'll use it in the right way, and I'll try not to be relying on that as my only supply. And that's one of the reasons that we're so active in development of local supplies, including recycled water.
Well, you know, there's some people that are probably saying they're grateful they don't have to work so hard, but they should realize that they enjoy the food they're enjoying, that there's a lot involved in farming today, but getting the water sourced from all these different places. And again, it's not just a California issue, because around the world they're facing things like this. I think I also should point out for people that aren't quite sure about the Delta, it's like east of San Francisco, maybe 40 or so miles, there's unbelievable number of islands, and the water passes through there. A lot of rivers come through there, and it's almost like the staging level for the canal for all the water that's coming down, that you're going to be building these, hopefully, they're these huge tunnels that are, as you point out, there's some controversy anytime you do anything of this scale. But
there is, but you know, Roger, as I mentioned before, we're limited on the amount of water that we can move in any single year because of the rainfall.
Yep.
We're at 20% this year. That won't change with the tunnels. If there's no rainfall, we won't be able to pump much water. What it allows us to do is move a lot of water when it's readily available. And that's best for the environment, and it's best for a reliable water supply. But you got to have a place to store it. So that's what we've done over the last several decades.
Well, and then, Randy, the other thing I hear you saying is to be open-minded or maybe even supportive of trying to not waste water and recover water, get the most use of it. And people that are skiing in Aspen or somewhere and they look at that snow and know it's on its way to contributing to one of those buckets we're going to be using for the produce that they're enjoying 52 weeks a year. It's a remarkable story. And you're working behind the scenes on all of this. And again, I want to add how grateful we should all be that people like you are willing to step up and volunteer to be leaders on these efforts.
Well, I appreciate that. I love California. It's a remarkable state, and the agriculture here is phenomenal. And even though I'm, you know, working for an urban agency, the interconnection is very clear. There's no question about it.
Well, Randy, I really appreciate talking to you. And let me just ask you this. If there's people that want to do some, you know, looking online to know more about the kind of projects that you've mentioned, anywhere you would suggest to them that they go to look for more information?
Eastern Municipal Water District has a very extensive website, and Metropolitan does as well. Metropolitan Water District of Southern California. Just Google those two things, and I think you'll find a lot of information. That's where I would start.
Well, and the next time they eat anything, think about the water that went into the food that made it all possible. And Randy Record, I really appreciate your being on Farm to Table Talk.
It's been my pleasure, Roger. I really appreciate the opportunity.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.